Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N Plus One studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we are there. This week, we're going to be discussing some of the new rules that were just recently released by USAT. A couple things that would be good to know, just so that you're in the know when you do start racing again. I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm phenomenal. I'm
ready. You got to bike today. Of course you're phenomenal.
I did get to bike today.
I'm phenomenal because I got to swim today.
That's right. The Masters has started back up.
And you didn't kill us all. Thank you. It was close.
I did get a new job at the Guillotine Factory.
Uh-huh.
I'll be heading there shortly.
Uh-huh. Da-dunk-dunk.
Okay, we had to start the joke. But yeah, no, Masters got started today. I didn't swim. I ran two 50-minute sessions. We have 2 hours. We're doing two 50-minute sessions. The second session kind of gets shortchanged on the time because we have to clean between the two sections.
So the first group got shortchanged or the
second group? The second group got shortchanged because the first group could come in before
six. Okay.
They were ready to go at six.
The
second group didn't get in until a little before seven. And we didn't really get started about 7:02, 7:03.
Yeah, that was okay. We were tired. The second group was sort of the slower group, more deliberate swimmers. What do you want to call us? I don't know. The non-collegiate athletes in past life.
It is a group that, for the most part, was, on average, slower speed swimmers than the first group.
We had a couple of faster ones in our group.
It became a real challenge to try to generate a workout that is compatible and can handle both groups and across swimmers and fit within a 50-minute time frame. That is not a lot of time to put together a swim workout that works, that can cover a number of areas. I wanted to cover freestyle and backstroke. The first group, the faster group, was a little, they dillied and dallied less than the second group did between sets and were able to get more done. I still didn't get to all the backstroke I really wanted to. The second group, we barely touched backstroke.
Yeah, we did a little bit, but not a whole lot.
And it's really weird to give the same practice back-to-back as a coach. Kind of interesting look at it. I did see that afterwards, at 8 o'clock, they start their lap swimming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Today, there was only one swimmer there, which is a good thing.
That surprises the heck out of me.
Not really. They don't get that many swimmers in that time period normally.
Yes, but where are all the people that normally swim before? Well, I guess
going
the ones
to work. There's a reason they swim before 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of those, I mean, and I know a couple of those, and one of those took my virtual bar class, and but that was from 6:30 to 7. She could, well, I guess maybe she couldn't be there at 7. Okay.
8.
Yeah.
The pool doesn't open to 8. Generally, there's not that many swimmers. I usually swim at 7:30 normally, and there might be 2 or 3 swimmers in general there outside of when the kids swim in the summer, which they're not doing.
Yeah. Jillian said it was very quiet. She lifeguarded for the first time today, and she said it was super quiet. And I don't know what shift she did, but I think it was this afternoon.
Okay. So. That doesn't surprise me. There's just not that many lap swimmers. And when you have 8 lanes, that really opens up some swimming.
Yeah.
And it's all weird because you only get 50 minutes to swim. You're able to come in at, say, 8, and you have to be out of the pool by 8:50. That only leaves about 45 minutes to swim, considering you have to get your stuff off, get in the water, and get going, and then get out.
Yeah.
With them 10, 15. I think they may have been getting them out 15 minutes early, so they have time to clean everything up. They have to clean. The way they've set it up is they put a chair at the end of each lane that you can swim in.
Right.
There's 4 chairs on one side, 4 chairs on the other, so you can alternate what ends of the pool you're starting on. They then have to clean all those chairs after each hour.
That seemed to be, anyway.
Yeah. And the bathroom and whatever else may have been touched between
Anybody
those
touched
periods.
Anything? Bleach it.
He basically had a spray can of bleach. I assume that's what that was.
Yeah. Yep.
Looked like he was spraying insecticide. Big one.
Yeah, that's right. He had the pump thing, That was actually pretty smart.
Yeah, it was just a sprayer, and they were just spraying it.
What you'd spray with weeds with, and just
they weren't too worried about it, like being on the ground or anything. I think it was just kind of a let's get this thing cleaned quickly so that the next group can.
Well, whatever they're using can't affect the pool chemicals too much, I guess. That's got to be bleach.
Yeah, it's bleach, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So I might get a chance to swim after Masters going forward, because since I know everybody there, especially the lifeguard, he's not going to force me to go and pay the $5 and get in to make sure I have a reservation and all of those in place.
Yeah, if there's nobody there, yeah.
As long as there's not 8 people there, I'll get to swim. And I think he said on Monday there was like 4 there at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
He got in trouble the day before for having the water aerobics ladies come in. They could have 10 for the water aerobics. You can have 10 people in the pool.
Okay.
Is the rule right now. That's why they're doing one per lane. But if you're a member of the same family, you can swim in the same lane.
Okay.
You still can't have more than 10 people in the pool at one time.
So if you have 8 families, you can't have 16 people. You can still only have 10.
Correct. So they come in and 10, and the way they're setting up for that is they're going to use the first 5 lanes, and they stay on opposite sides of the backstroke flag.
Okay.
Is what they're supposed to do. Of course, they all wanted to be in one lane.
Of course they did. Of course.
Then they didn't want to go under the lane lines.
Because they don't want to get their hair wet.
He loosened the lane lines for them to be able to walk into the different lanes. Of course, they complained about that. Tom comes in, and he's like, you can't do that again. You can't touch the lane lines.
Gotcha.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next time water aerobics runs. I assume they'll run on Wednesday.
Tom is going to be there to tell them.
No, he's going to tell them. He's like, sorry, that's the rules.
Yeah.
If you want to do water aerobics, you got to do water aerobics. I figure if they wanted to, they could get in. They could probably slide in. They may not be able to get back out. They're going to have to get their hair wet when they leave.
Yeah, they are. Yep. They're not going to be happy about that.
They just won't go, I would assume.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Get your hair wet or see your friends. I mean, and I'm sure many of those people have been pretty isolated through all of this, so they're pretty excited to see each other. Huh. That'll be interesting.
I'll be interested to see. Hopefully they do swim on Wednesday, because I'd love to hear the story on that Thursday. I end up sitting there talking to lifeguard for about a half hour afterwards, chatting about different things, catching up over the last 4 months that we've been gone. He was actually able to get unemployment and actually did quite well with that.
I figured he would. Yeah, that's good. I'm glad. I was a little worried about him.
He ended up just being the teacher for his couple kids.
Yeah, he's got 2 or 3 children. Yeah. So yeah, that actually probably worked out fairly well for him. I'm glad he was able to do that.
I am too. I was kind of worried about him.
Yeah.
And well, I really wasn't worried about him. My fear was that he would find a job somewhere else and not come back.
We wouldn't have a lifeguard.
We wouldn't have a morning lifeguard. That was really my big concern in the whole situation.
Yeah.
I knew he'd be fine. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
It's just, you really need a morning lifeguard.
Nobody else will do it. Oh, wow.
So the Masters got started. That's going to be interesting as that goes forward as far as coaching.
I want to know how many steps you got walking back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Oh, my gosh. I got about 3,500, which is about 1,000 more than I normally get into practice. Easily 1,000, 1,500 more than I normally get into practice.
I mean, you have us go to one end of the pool and back and forth, but yeah, not as much as you did today. Boy, you got to shout a lot, too.
Yeah, you have to shout. You're shouting from the middle of the pool to both ends. It's horrendous.
I could hear you fine, by the way. And I was, I was way over on one side, but I could hear you when you were on the other side. Your voice carries.
Yeah. And the swimmer next to you, she broke the rules.
Yes, she did. That was pretty funny. I wasn't going to tell her she was breaking the rules. I wanted to talk to her. So I was like, this is okay.
Yeah, the lifeguard saw that, and we were like, well, let's just let this go. He's like,
we were about 6 feet apart. I mean, I stayed away. I had that end lane, which is a little bit wider, so I could stay further away when we were talking. So
there were 3 of y'all down at the one end together. It's a no-no.
Yeah. Well, Terry, the other lady on the other side of her did pretty good about staying away. But yeah. Yeah.
I wonder. Anyway, that was kind of a fun little ditty to the side.
We still listened. And I mean, it was good because she's not a very confident swimmer and she was quickly overwhelmed. And I was like, it's fine. We're going to do it this way. Just follow me. And she did much better, you know, with the intervals and stuff. She's somebody who gets very flustered. She's a great swimmer. She's much better than I am, but she just gets so flustered.
And right.
It's just like, it's okay. We're going to do it this way. Ignore Brian. Here we go. And she's like, okay. 10, 9, you know, there we go. That's pretty funny. We had a good time. It was good practice. It was much better. I attempted to swim in the river on Friday. Water temperature was about 75. I was teaching an 11-year-old, trying to give him a lesson. And his dad, who is kind of a non-swimmer, I wore a wetsuit, thank God, because it was freaking cold. And so I'm really glad I was able to swim today because I felt like I had no idea what I was doing in a wetsuit on Friday. I'm like, I can't swim in a straight line. There's a current. I can't see. This is all awful.
Most of the swimmers had some technical issues, a lot of crossing over, which isn't surprising to me. There's a feel for where your hand is that gets lost when you don't swim all the time. There's going to be a little minor technical issues we're going to have to correct over the next month or so until people kind of get their form back. The nice thing is because there is a little bit of lost memory, you can kind of reshape and try to get rid of some bad habits.
That's what I'm hoping for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can get you to stop crossing over.
I can stop crossing over. I'll tell you, I've been doing a lot of strength classes. I mean, I've been biking, I've been running, I've been doing all that the last 3 months. But that pull down motion, I was like, whoo, I'm so glad it was only a 50-minute session because I don't know how much more I could have done without really feeling some pain. Because I haven't felt that in 3 months, that pushing against the water. I was like, oh my God. And I only got one cramp pushing off the wall and when we were doing backstroke, and I had to stop. Other than that, it was good. It was a lot of fun.
The practices should be short enough that everybody should be fine as far as fitness goes. I pushed a little bit today. I was kind of just seeing where people were. The other thing we did this week was our family packed up and we went to Cincinnati. We wanted to go up and... This came out of my desire to go up and ride the Rails to Trails now that Alex has started riding his bike and
he really
doesn't like the hills, and that's all we have here in Frankfurt.
It's hard to go anywhere without having a big hill, from your house especially, yeah, or dealing with traffic, yeah.
The big thing are the hills.
Yeah.
You can ride downtown Frankfurt, but that's really not that far. You can ride in downtown Frankfurt.
Yeah, it's only 3-4 miles on the trail.
A couple miles to run around. That took us up to Cincinnati. They have a Rails to Trails up there where they have hundreds of miles of flat trails where they've taken old railroad tracks, pulled up the railroad tracks, and at least these sections were all paved. I'm not sure everything is paved on most of these roads. Some of them are gravel.
The one in Vienna, Illinois, where there's a Tunnel Hill race, it's 100 miles, and it's, well, I guess it's 26 miles, and it's rock dust. And then my parents' place up in Massachusetts, up in Lexington, Mass., that was the first Rails to Trails, and that's paved. Mm-hmm. So
not Cincinnati's all of it's paved. Like, most big chunk of it's paved, especially around most of your urban areas.
Yeah.
It's when you get out into the rural parts where they become more of a gravel-esque type.
You could ride a road bike on it. I probably wouldn't want to, but yeah.
They're really meant for kind of gravel bikes at that point,
or
a cyclocross type bike for that type
of riding. How did Alex do?
We went out and rode. He butt got sore. Trying to get him a new saddle now so his butt isn't going to be sore. Really probably should get him some...
Cycling shorts
or the cycling underwear is probably the better solution. Yeah, that way he can just wear whatever just shorts he wants.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to look into those actually.
I've got a pair. Cheaper. I usually wear them mountain biking.
Yeah, they're a whole lot cheaper than the cycling shorts too. And I've got enough running pants that are fine for cycling. Yeah, I should just do that.
I mean, you're going to tear up the shorts if you do a lot of cycling with them. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Most of your mountain bike shorts and stuff that they have are real thick material so they can hold up to the friction that occurs between your saddle and leggings.
You're behind.
But they do work. They're pretty nice. They're not as padded a lot of times as the cycling shorts, but they generally have pretty good padding.
It's a good option.
A good option. I'd like to go that route. But I did find an old gel saddle in my box of stuff down in the shop that I put on there. It's a men's saddle, so it's probably a little big for him.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be that much bigger than what he is riding currently. Well, he test rode it around the driveway and be okay with it once I made some adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting when we get out and ride a little bit longer if his butt still hurts.
How long did it take you all to do? You did what, 10 miles?
We did 10 miles. We averaged about 8 miles an hour. That would be about an hour and 15. We probably spent about an hour and 45 minutes riding because we took a couple breaks, hung out, saw a snake crossing the trail. That was kind of cool.
That's fun.
A lot of stopping, seeing different things. And we'd ride. He rode quite well. We did it 2 days. Both days we did about 10, 11 miles.
Cool.
A lot of fun to go up there.
Glad you guys were able to do that.
We had the hotel had a pool.
So you did like a triathlon weekend.
Almost. Just didn't run.
You didn't run? Yeah. I'm sure you guys ran around somewhere.
Not really. He was tired from the cycling.
Oh.
He wanted to swim. We had a little bitty pool up there. And there was nobody in the hotel. I think there was maybe a dozen guests at most. I think one other family might have been there that used the pool opposite us. We there was never anybody in the pool when we we swam 3 times. Well, my wife and son swam 3 times. I swam twice. I didn't go down the first time.
Yeah,
I was tired and wanted to get a little bit of work done when we got down there. I guess it was Friday night. Went Friday, Saturday.
Yeah,
and it was good. We're about ready to leave, and my son drops the whole, "I'll be able to sleep tonight," and I'm like, "What?" Like, "Yeah, I've been scared every night." I'm like, "Oh my God." And that's why I stay up, especially with all the motorcycles going by and revving their engines.
Maybe we need to get a good sound machine for your kid at night or something so he doesn't hear everything. Because you guys, you just get so much noise from downtown.
We do get the noise, and he's just scared from the whole event. It was such a random event, and just the emotional aspect of all of that.
Yeah.
Anytime you hear a revving engine, he's probably thinking of that event.
Yeah.
We're trying to get a gate installed now, hopefully. That's going to be very expensive.
Yeah, those aren't cheap, but it'll last forever.
Hopefully.
It's an investment.
Provide some security for my wife and son, who have not quite gotten over the episode as much as I have.
Heck, I wasn't even here and I haven't gotten over it. I came the next day. I'm still a friggin' wreck. God.
It doesn't help that we have all these anti-police protests and stuff going on right now.
The world has gone crazy, and you guys seem to have gotten a bit of the brunt of it, unfortunately.
I'm not really in the mood to hear a lot of anti-police and pro-criminal type of arguments.
I
kind of
like it when
right
they
now.
Show up here when we need them.
Yeah, I got a hole in my house. I hope the criminals go away for a long time.
Yeah.
Then you sit there and we go and listen to all the criminal stuff. And every daggone one of them that was before him in the arraignment part of the process.
Oh, yeah, when you were watching
every single one of them were former criminals. My favorite was the one who he doesn't have a record here in Kentucky. And he's like, wait a minute, doesn't he have a record in another state? And they start looking at it. Oh, yeah, he's a flight risk. We'll have to...
Bing, bing, bing. Jeez.
He had such a great time in another state, he decided to come to our state.
Oh, my God.
And ply his wares here.
Yeah. It's interesting. One of our friend of mine is an ex-police officer and trains police officers. It's very interesting hanging out with him right now.
it's interesting. Yeah, he's not going to get a lot of sympathy from me for criminals right now after having my bike shop robbed, my house robbed, my barn burned down, the street house up the street and down the street from me burned down, and now a car, a big hole in my house from a car. I'm not very
We're
fond
kind
of
supportive of
right
the
now.
Police over at the Schenkenfelder household.
Right now, Jeez. Maybe in 10 years if we don't have any more incidents.
Yeah.
I might be a little more sympathetic. Oh, man, it's definitely been a crazy year or two for me around
2020,
here.
Hold my beer.
Well, we did get away. He got a couple good nights sleep, and hopefully we're on the back track here of getting him not be scared when he goes to bed.
Well, it was pretty funny when you all left. I took care of all the critters at the house, and, I told your wife, I'm like, I'll stay at the house, and I'll make sure everything's okay. And she was like, no, it's too dangerous. Not unless you bring your dog. Don't stay at the house. And I'm like, okay. I won't stay at the house. I'll just come and feed the animals and I'll make sure everything's locked up. Because I was like, I knew if I stayed here and she knew that she wouldn't sleep wherever she was.
Like, that's okay. Probably true.
So I was like, okay, let's just make this easier on Brian's wife. I'll just stay at my house and we'll be good. And everything was fine. Everything was absolutely fine. But, yep. It just, yeah.
We just have to reframe things. Whenever we hear the cops go off, that's just one more bad guy who's not going to come up here and mess with us.
There you go.
Eventually, they're all going to be gone because the police are going off all the time nowadays.
Every time we hear the siren, yep, there you go. There goes another bad guy. There you go.
Oh, we should get into our topic.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, we should, because we're getting it. Yeah, a little.
Okay,
little.
I do have another joke. Let's get another joke here before we get going.
Okay. What do you got for us?
What do you call an apology written in dots and dashes?
I have no idea.
Remorse code.
That's awful.
Ooh. Oh, okay, one more before we get going here.
Okay.
How do you spot a blind man at a nudist beach?
Oh, dear.
It's not hard.
Oh. I don't know. I might have to make you edit that one out. I don't know. That caught me a little off guard.
We're talking about rules.
Let's start talking about rules. We're going to let everybody know that our podcast is sponsored by 3Sport Endurance Coaching. Check them out at go3sport.com. That's all I'm going to say about that. You know who we are. We're a lot of fun. Come join us. We got a great team. We work hard. It's a lot of fun. We'll make a plan that'll suit your life. All right, so we're going to talk about USAT rules. There were three changes, adjustments, whatever you want to call them, to the rules. The first one dealt with helping each other, helping another participant. The way the changes read, it says participants competing in the same event may assist each other with incidental items such as, but not restricted to, food and drinks after an aid station, pumps, tubular tires, inner tubes, and puncture repair kits. Participants may not provide any item of equipment to another participant competing in the same event, which results in the donor participant being unable to continue with their own competition. This includes, but is not restricted to, the complete bicycle frame, wheels, and helmet. The penalty for this is disqualification of both participants. So you can't give your bike to somebody that's been in a wreck.
Right. But you can give somebody an inner tube if they don't have one that's right. The flat. You can't pull an inner tube out of your working bike and give it to them and not have something for yourself to continue on the race with.
If that happens,
then you are both disqualified. This rule with the other rules comes from the desire to combine or unify the rules between USAT, ITU, ITU, and Ironman triathlons. They want to try to make the rules uniform throughout them so you don't have different rule sets depending on the race.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Which is a good idea. Most people don't realize that Ironman has different rules than
the
other races. There are not very many that are different. There are a few that are. And some of this is to try to combine and unify between them. Originally, Ironman was supposed to be a self-supported event. You couldn't get help from anybody during a race.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
In theory, you weren't supposed to be able to give a tube or something like that to anybody else during the race.
Okay.
Now they're allowing that, which makes sense. The can't give someone else your bike to continue, that falls under, not falls under, it is more applicable probably to Olympic racing, especially when you have countries involved. I have three people from one country in a race. The favorite from my country has a problem with their bike. I can't just give them my wheel and send them on their way, or give them my bike and send them on their way.
Right, and take their crippled bike.
Which is what happens all the time in cycling in general.
Yeah.
You'll see.
Yeah, they do that all the time, don't they?
They'll give their leader the bike. They'll take their wheel off their bike and give it to the leader and send them on their way. And they'll get a bike from their van some point later. They're not important to the race. They're expendable. Here's their bike. Yeah. Go ride.
No big deal. Yeah.
No big deal. In triathlon, that's not the case. For most people, this isn't a big deal. I'm not going to, here's my bike, go ride it to finish just because I like you.
Yeah. The only way I can see, like, is if there was something physically wrong with me and I couldn't continue or didn't want to, you know, cramps, whatever, sick. Well, here, you know, just take my bike and you finish since I'm already kind of out of the game.
Right.
I can see that happening.
Potentially.
Potentially, but.
Mostly that's for any type of team sport. If we're doing team triathlon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like collegiate triathlon, where we have a team involved in that as well. You don't want to be able to give it to your star person in those situations. It's already kind of bad enough that you'll have a swimmer and cyclist who will potentially pace.
Your
person who's not necessarily the best runner will blow themselves up just to get to the run. You don't want that same situation where the person gets a flat and the other person comes in and is like, here, take my bike, finish the race, and that person is stuck. That's the reason that rule is brought about, I'm guessing.
Let's see. The second one, a participant's helmet must be securely fastened at all times when the participant is in possession of the bike, which means from the time they remove their bike from the rack at the start of the bike leg until after they've placed their bike on the rack at the finish of the bike leg. So now you've always had to have a helmet on your head when you're mounted on a bike.
The rule used to be the helmet must be fastened before the person mounts the bike and at the time when they dismount the bike. After that, you could unfasten it while you were running to your...
Right, so you could be taking off your helmet while you're running.
As long as the helmet was on your head until the bike got on the rack, you were good. You couldn't take the helmet off.
I didn't realize that.
Once you pulled the bike off the rack, you had to have your helmet on. It just didn't have to be fastened.
Okay.
In theory, what people would do is while they were running, they'd unfasten it so that when they got to their transition spot, they could just pull the helmet off without having to unfasten it while they were stopped.
Okay.
It allowed you to fasten it while you were running and potentially unfasten it while you were running, and you weren't doing it at your transition space.
So why the change on this one? Were people forgetting to fasten their helmet?
That's probably the case.
Okay.
I think it becomes a safety thing of, hey, it has to be strapped, ready to go. So you don't make the mistake of getting on the bike and riding away with it unstrapped. The problem with that is the penalty for that is DQ.
Yeah.
The other interesting helmet part of the rule is you have to wear the helmet if you ride your bike around the venue of the race.
Right.
As well.
And that's not listed on, you know, that's not listed as a change. That's always been the rule. I mean, if you're riding your bike, I mean, we saw it up in Cleveland, people riding from the hotel to the race venue, you know, with all of their stuff, people riding their bikes just from their cars and everything. And I don't know how many people we saw without a helmet on their head.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people before a race will ride up to the transition area without a helmet. If they see you, they can disqualify you.
Yeah.
Which is always interesting.
I knew that rule, and I was kind of perplexed when I saw that happening so much, especially at some place like Nationals. Figured everybody there would comply, because you don't want to not do Nationals.
Because the actual chin strap violation is the helmet must be fastened before the participant first mounts the bicycle at all times when the participant is on the bicycle and must not be unfastened until the participant is dismounted. Doesn't say where.
Now it's... You have to have your bike racked before you can...
You can't have your chin strap hanging loose during the race, is what they've added.
Okay.
Which I believe is a ITU standard.
Okay.
They're just kind of unifying the rules with that one.
Well, that makes sense. It's definitely a safety thing. Don't forget your helmet. All right. Let's see. The third one they did is any non-traditional or unusual bicycle construction or equipment to which the USA Triathlon bike specification in section 5.11 cannot easily be applied shall be illegal unless details have been submitted to the USA Triathlon commissioner of officials who will forward it to the ITU for a decision. So you can't ride a funky bike without prior approval. So
triathlon is one of the interesting sports in that their cycling rules are nowhere near as strict as UCI, i.e. professional cycling. Professional cycling puts restrictions on the size of the frame itself, how wide down tubes can be and stuff. The one specialized TT bike is illegal in UCI because the down tube is too wide.
Okay.
They ended up putting a bladder in there for...
Well, isn't that to prevent people from putting mini motors?
No, most of it's because it's more aero.
Oh, okay.
The UCI tries to make it so it's a stock bike that anybody can buy.
Okay.
And they don't want really funky, weird bikes to a great extent. They want it to look like a bike.
That makes sense, yeah. It's a bike race. It should look like a bike.
You start seeing the triathlon-specific bikes, and they get pretty funky.
Mm-hmm.
The Specialized has one. Diamondback came out with one that was really, really weird. Have you seen that one?
Mm-mm.
I have to show you a picture of the Diamondback TT bike. I don't know if I've ever seen one in. Yeah, do a Google search on the TT Diamond. It looks like a motorcycle.
Looking it up now. Let's see.
It's also like a $9,000 bike.
Ooh.
It looks like a motorcycle. They've basically very little. They've got the top tube that goes across. It looks like a normal top tube. The down tube that goes down to the pedal comes down, but it also curves around the wheel like a motorcycle would be. The back, the seat tube also has a fairing behind it, much like the Trek Speed concept. And it looks like a motorcycle.
Oh, whoa. That doesn't look quite right. Wow. That's very bizarre looking.
It's a very bizarre bike, but it's legal under the triathlon, but that would not be UCI legal.
Yeah,
you could
not
ride
be...
that at the Tour de France, so to speak.
Yeah, no. Yeah, they wouldn't like that too much.
No. But it is interesting to see the actual rules for bike specifications. It is kind of interesting.
It's very
they're trying to make it so you don't have a bike that doesn't have the basic features of the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first rule, this length cannot exceed 2 meters and a width cannot exceed 75 centimeters, which is about 2 feet. That means you can't have like a super long bike that would be more aerodynamic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Especially if you put, depending on how you set it up.
Yeah.
It's like a kind of like a kayak in certain situations. The longer kayaks tend to cut through the water better. You'd have the same type of effect with a bike. So they have that. The distance from the ground to the center of the chain wheel axle must measure at least 24 centimeters. That is the chain wheel axle is such a weird way of saying your...
I was going to say, what is the chain wheel axle?
That is, I believe, your bottom bracket where your pedals go through. So the chain wheel would be the chain ring.
Okay.
Your pedals, you have your pedals, you have your cranks. The cranks go together through the bottom bracket. That axle is what they're talking about.
Okay.
The chain wheel is their chain ring.
Gotcha.
Is what they're really talking about.
Okay.
It has to be at least 24 centimeters off the ground, which is about 8 inches. That means you can't have like a super low bike, low-to-the-ground bike. Again, something that would potentially give you aerodynamic benefits. Let's see. What else did they have in here?
Yeah, that would be very hard to pedal something that low, too.
Well, you'd have to have miniature cranks or something.
Yeah.
Or you could do like a forward-type crank system. Basically anything where you'd be like sitting on the ground type environment. Like a recumbent, which would be tremendously faster, especially on like a flat course. You'd be much faster than you would on a regular TT bike. You'd be able to really cut the wind quite a bit. That's what they're trying to get rid of there. They've got rules about where the saddle can be in relationship to your bottom bracket. The nose of the saddle may be no more than 5 centimeters in front of and no more than 15 centimeters behind a vertical line passing through your bottom bracket, i.e. you can't be really far back, like laying down, or really far forward.
Okay.
I don't know why you'd want to be that far forward. That wouldn't be very advantageous.
Who knows?
You just wouldn't be able to get good push on the bike, but I could see potentially being back and kind of really stretched out, try to lower your center of gravity some.
Mm-hmm.
Without losing too much power. And they have other rules. They have rules about the integrated water carriers and stuff.
The water bottles.
Because the other thing they talk about is you can't add anything to the bike that would be give you aerodynamic advantages. Any type of fairing. I.e. you can't take something and put between your top tube, your down tube, and your seat tube.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, if you could put something there, you would be a lot faster.
Okay.
But that would be against the USA 2 rules.
Big empty triangle.
You're basically filling in that big empty triangle. That's what a lot of the Diamondback bike does, a lot of that.
I found the pictures and I'm sitting here looking at it going, whoa.
It fills in that... It
fills in all that spot
that
behind
space,
the front wheel.
Which is an aerodynamic problem.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff that they don't want you being able to add on to your bike.
Okay.
If your bike comes with it, that's one thing. But you can't add on to your bike to provide that type of benefit.
So these Diamondback bikes are legal for triathlon.
Yes, because they don't break any rules. You're not adding anything to the bike. That's all considered part of the bike frame.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
A lot of people have tried. You've got some people out there doing some weird things with bikes to try to change up how TT bikes go. And these rules are trying to give you some type of something that looks like a bike. And wouldn't. That's what they're trying to do here, something that doesn't look like a spaceship that looks like a bike.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is they're saying, hey, if we can't just look at the bike and do simple measurements to determine if this is within the rules or not, we're just not going to allow you to use it unless you get prior permission to be able to use the bike.
We don't want to be taking up time on race day to figure out what the heck you've done to your bike.
Exactly. That's really it. They don't want to have to spend 2 hours doing precise measurements. They want to be able to look at it, maybe grab a ruler, and if they can't easily measure these dimensions, you're done. Because they don't want to be like, well, you know, let's get out a very precise measuring device and see if everything falls within it.
This eliminates all of the arguments from people. It's like, you know what, this is a new rule, you're out. And it makes it a whole lot easier. And they do say, I mean, these are, because they're new, they're kind of easing into all of this too. What does it say? At sanctioned events, you know, when it's safe and appropriate, you'll get warnings and, you know, an amend on new rule as they take effect.
Although, you know, now let's be real. Most of these rules are not going to affect most racers.
Yeah.
The only one that would potentially have effect for anybody out there listening would be the chin strap one.
Yeah.
Because I'll see people at races without their chin strap buckled.
It says it's not necessary for an official to give a warning prior to issuing a more serious penalty. So, yeah, do your chin strap up. And that's about it that you got to worry about. And don't give away your bike in the middle of a race.
Yes, don't give away your bike.
You can give them a tube. Don't give them.
You can give them a tube. You can give them stuff. You just can't. It can't be. You can't give them anything that that you're gonna.
Yeah.
They won't allow you to finish the race.
Yep. So I wonder if you give them your last tube and then you get a flat.
That's okay. That would be okay.
That would be like the only thing I could think
of. At that point in time, you weren't unable to finish. If something, let's say I had one tube and I got two flats and I wasn't able to finish. That's just
bad luck.
Bad luck.
Yeah.
Yep. And not anything else. Now, I would probably not give my tube to someone else if I was really serious about racing. One, I wouldn't want to stop. And two, I'm not really want to put myself at risk of potentially getting a flat and not being able to change it and continue on the race with myself.
Yeah.
Now, people will stop and do it if you're not serious about racing. I get it. At least you won't get a penalty for
it. I stopped and gave a girl a whole toolkit in one race, and I still won the sprint division. And she came and brought me my toolkit later.
Well, that was nice of her.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, her parents, like, I mean, she was a kid, and that's why I was like, man, she was maybe 15, 16, and, you know, I was like, do you have a spare? Do you have a toolkit? She's like, nope. And I slowed down, got it off the back of my bike, chucked it to her, and said, good luck. Gotta go. So it is possible to be nice and still do well, but that was unusual.
Yeah. It also depends on kind of what age groups you're in and what demographics you're in. The guy side, especially in my age group, is just so brutally competitive. I can't afford to stop and waste 2 minutes of my time or something.
Yeah.
If I want to be competitive and have good races in my age group.
I ended up, I won like overall on that one, but that was a very, very small race.
That helps to do well in a race is make sure to find the small ones.
Find the small ones.
It's always great when you have like 3 people in your age group because that means you're always going to podium.
You're always going to get something. That's right.
I don't get that advantage. I'm still in the 40s, so
I'm sorry.
I always have a ton of people.
Eventually,
in my age group.
People will drop out.
When I'm 80.
Well, thank you so much for everybody for listening. If you're looking for a coach, check us out at Go3Sport. And have an awesome, awesome day.